Thank you for purchasing Atlantis Audio Tours and Free Tours by Foot Self-Guided Freedom Trail Audio Tour. I'm going to be with you for our walk today. There is a Google Map and a PDF version of the tour, if you want to read along, included in your confirmation email. The audio tour is one long audio file. You can stop and start at your pleasure. I'll let you know when we're moving on to another location, and you can pause until you get there. Whether you walk straight there, or take a detour to enjoy a museum, or grab a pint of Sam Adams. Welcome to Boston's Freedom Trail. Boston's historic center may be small, but it packs in so much history. From an experiment in Puritan exclusiveness to an inclusive modern metropolis, every street, corner, and building whispers stories from the past. We start our tour outside the Park Street T station on the Boston Common, and we'll follow the Freedom Trail to the Bunker Hill Monument. To follow the trail is easy. Look for the continuous double brick line that marks the 2.5 mile, or 4 kilometer, Freedom Trail. For our first stop, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about the Freedom Trail, Boston, and Boston Common here, before we move on to our next location, the Massachusetts State House. But you may want to listen as you walk to the State House. I'll let you know when to pause in case you aren't there yet. A local journalist in 1951 suggested building a pedestrian trail to link Boston's most historic sites. The mayor at the time, John Hines, liked the idea and ordered the construction of the Freedom Trail, and it has hosted millions and millions of visitors since it was first created. Each historic site is marked with a small sign displaying a short description of that particular site. There are also metal markers which dot the Freedom Trail denoting the sites. Most of the sites are free and open to the public. There are a few places which charge admission, and they include the Old South Meeting House, Old State House, Paul Revere House, and starting May 1, 2018, the Old North Church. The Puritans founded Boston in the 1630s. The land was purchased from William Blackstone, the first European who came to what was known as the Shawmut Peninsula in 1625. Blackstone lived here until 1634, when he left for Rhode Island and sold the land to the Puritans on the way out. When the Puritans came in the 1630s, they named this area Boston, for the place in England where they came from. The Puritans were Christians and were formed in England when King Henry VIII split the church from Catholicism to Anglicanism. The Puritans didn't think the Anglican Church went far enough away from the Catholic Church. Just think of the Puritans as being very strict Protestants. Your tour starts on the Boston Common, the oldest public park in the United States, outside the Park Street subway station. This was the first subway station in the United States, built in 1897. It is sometimes incorrectly referred to as the Boston Commons, plural, but it is singular, just common. It is over 50 acres today as a public park. The Boston Common was founded in 1634 as a common space for the grazing of cattle and was used for that purpose for almost 200 years until 1830. This was a camp for the British Army leading up to the American Revolutionary War, and the common was used for public hangings up until 1817. Today, the common serves as a public park for all to use for formal and informal gatherings. Events such as concerts, protests, and ice skating often take place in the park. Martin Luther King Jr. and Pope John Paul II have both made speeches here, and Judy Garland gave her largest concert ever on the Common. From here, follow the Freedom Trail up to the Massachusetts State House, stopping at the large gates outside underneath the Golden Dome.
Next stop.
The Massachusetts State House was built in 1798 and is one of the oldest continually running state capitol buildings in America. This remarkable dome at 30 feet or 9 meters high and 50 feet or 15 meters wide is gilded in 23 karat gold and was originally made of wood. The dome was covered in copper by Paul Revere in 1802. And was gilded on the nation's 100th birthday in 1876. Due to fear that it may come under attack during World War II, the dome was painted black from 1941 to 1945. Have you ever heard of Boston as the hub of the universe? Now, Bostonians are not known for lacking confidence, but the origin of this nickname is more benign than at first glance. In 1858, a story called The Autocrat of the Breakfast Table by Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. referred to the dome of the State House as the hub of the solar system. This is when one of the nicknames for Boston was first coined. That is why the Boston Bruins professional hockey team has a bee in the hub of a wheel as its logo. The stairs of the Bullfinch entrance just in front of you are used only on two occasions: when the president or foreign heads of state visit Boston, and during what is known as the Long Walk, when the outgoing governor leaves the building on his last day of office, greets the newly elected governor, and they shake hands on the stairs as the new governor enters the building. The former governor then crosses the street into the Boston Common, symbolically rejoining the people as a citizen. The architect of the Massachusetts State House was Charles Bullfinch, whose name you see posted on the front gate in front of the Gold Dome. Bullfinch is considered to be the first American-born architect, and also designed much of the architecture on Beacon Hill. Bullfinch also added the third floor to Faneuil Hall in 1804 during the building's expansion. Charles Bullfinch was also one of the architects of the United States Capitol Building in Washington, D.C. Having a pub named for you is considered to be one of the highest honors in Boston, and Charles Bullfinch also has that distinction. Now, some of you will likely visit the bar that inspired the hit TV comedy Cheers. This particular bar was called the Bull and Finch, named after the architect Charles Bullfinch, when it opened in 1968. In 1981, the pub changed its name to the more popular and famous Cheers Bar. To the left of the Gold Dome is Horace Mann. He was appointed the Secretary of the Massachusetts State Board of Education in 1837, the first in the country, and he represented Massachusetts in the U.S. House of Representatives in the 1820s. An education reformer, he helped promote public education and is known as the father of the American public education. To the right of the Gold Dome is the statue of Daniel Webster. Daniel Webster was born in New Hampshire and represented both New Hampshire and Massachusetts in the U.S. House of Representatives for 10 years, and as a U.S. Senator for 19 years throughout the early 1800s. He was a Secretary of State under three different presidents: William Henry Harrison, John Tyler, and Millard Fillmore. A great orator and lawyer, Webster argued hundreds of cases in front of the U.S. Supreme Court, and won about half of them. In 1836, he ran for U.S. president and only carried the state of Massachusetts. Daniel Webster delivered the eulogy for two U.S. presidents at Boston's Faneuil Hall, John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, who both died on the same day, July 4th, 1826. Further to the right is the main entrance of the Massachusetts State House, known as the Hooker Entrance, named after the Civil War General Joseph Hooker, who sits high on his horse at the entrance. One of only a few generals from Massachusetts, Hooker took over the Army of the Potomac in January of 1863. He was relieved of duty just a few days before the Battle of Gettysburg. His best-known battle as general was the Battle of Chancellorsville, a defeat for the Union Army, but one where Southern General Stonewall Jackson was killed. Although General Hooker's camps were not vacant of alcohol, gambling, and call women, the slang term for prostitution is not taken from his name, as some may think. That name predates General Hooker by about 30 years. The Massachusetts State House welcomes the public by hosting free tours every weekday from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. from the General Hooker entrance. Walk back across the street, and you'll be at the Robert Gould Shaw Memorial.
Next stop.
This memorial shows Colonel Robert Gould Shaw and his men of the 54th Regiment of the Union Army. The 54th Regiment was the first all-volunteer black unit of the U.S. Army, which was formed in 1863 during the American Civil War. The 1989 film Glory tells the story of the 54th Regiment and stars Matthew Broderick as Shaw. This sculpture was created by American sculptor Augustus Saint-Gaudens, who also sculpted the standing Lincoln statue in Chicago and the William Tecumseh Sherman equestrian statue in New York City's Central Park. This memorial to Shaw, however, is considered to be one of his best works. It shows Shaw and his men marching down Beacon Street on their way to fight in the American Civil War. The 54th became famous for the Battle of Fort Wagner, South Carolina, on July 18, 1863. At least 74 enlisted men and 3 officers, including Colonel Gould Shaw, were killed in that battle, and many more were wounded. The 54th was known for their tenacity on the battlefield and were very important reinforcements for the Union Army in the middle of that conflict. Notice the 2 elm trees which flanked the Robert Gould Shaw Memorial. They are the oldest elm trees in the Western Hemisphere, and were planted by the famous John Hancock, who lived across the street. For our next stop, follow the trail back into the Boston Common to the starting point. Take the left down Tremont Street, follow the brick line, and cross Park Street to the Park Street Church.
Next stop.
In 1804, the Religious Improvement Society began weekly meetings with lectures and prayers. These were mostly former members of the Old South Meeting House, who wanted a more conservative and evangelical church. The society organized the charter for the church on February 27, 1809. The Park Street Church building itself was designed by Peter Banner, and the steeple was modeled after the spire of St. Bride's Church in London. According to legend, a baker's apprentice invented the first tiered wedding cake using the spire of St. Bride's Church as inspiration, wide at the bottom and narrower as it goes to the top. The Park Street Church steeple, at 217 feet, or about 70 meters, was the tallest building in Boston when it was built in 1809, and was the first building one would see when entering the city. This church was the site where abolitionist William Lloyd Garrison made his first anti-slavery speech on the church pulpit in 1829, and the church choir sang for the first time ever in public the song My Country Tis of Thee on July 4, 1831. The corner of Park Street and Tremont Street was once referred to as Brimstone Corner. During the War of 1812, brimstone, an ingredient of gunpowder, was stored in the basement of the church. But some say the nickname also came from the old-style Congregationalist ministers at the church and their fire and brimstone sermons. Our next spot on the trail sits just on the other side of Park Street Church.
Next stop.
The Granary Burying Ground is where 3 signers of the Declaration of Independence rest, as well as Paul Revere and Mary Goose, who is credited with being the children's author, Mother Goose. As you enter the Granary Burying Ground on Tremont Street, notice the Egyptian Revival gates. These gates were designed by Isaiah Rogers, who was a supervising architect for the Ohio State House, and who also played a role in designing and patenting 4 burglar-proof vaults built in the northwest corner of the U.S. Treasury Building in Washington, D.C. The first thing you will see in the center of the burial ground is an obelisk with the name Franklin on it. This is the resting place of Benjamin Franklin's mother, father, brothers, and sisters. All of the Franklins rest here, except for Benjamin Franklin, who was born in Boston and left at the age of 17 to make a name for himself in the largest city of the colonies at the time, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The Granary Burial Ground, established in 1660, is Boston's third oldest and was used as the main burial ground for Boston from 1660 to 1860. Because many of the plots have multiple burials, no one is quite sure how many bodies are buried here. There is estimated to be between 3,500 and 5,000 bodies at rest here, among the 1,000 headstones. Follow the path to the most famous of all the graves in Boston, Paul Revere. You cannot miss it, as it is directly behind the Franklin Monument, and is in the shape of a pedestal. Paul Revere was made famous with a poem written in 1860 by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, The Midnight Ride of Paul Revere, a poem many students have read or memorized in school. The poem tells the tale of his ride to Lexington and Concord on April 18, 1775, that resulted in the first shot fired in the American Revolution on April 19, 1775. Paul Revere was a silversmith, a bell maker, and was also appointed coroner for Suffolk County. His company sealed the dome of the Massachusetts State House in copper. They also made the bell and bolts for the U.S. Constitution and lined the keel of the ship with copper. Paul Revere died in 1818 at the age of 83. Also buried here is the late, great Samuel Adams. His boulder-like headstone is one of only two boulder-like stones in the burial ground, and serves almost like bookends of the granary. Many visitors associate Samuel Adams with the beer named for him, and while he was a maltster for a while, he worked in his father's business, a malt house used to brew beer, he has nothing to do with the Sam Adams Brewery in Boston. Samuel Adams is known as the Mob Master of Boston, stirring up much of the discontent in Boston against the crown. He was a founding member of the Sons of Liberty. He was also a charismatic, fiery speaker who whipped up dissent and wrote petitions against the British crown. He signed the Declaration of Independence, and at the age of 73 took over the office of governor after John Hancock died in 1793. He is the oldest person to serve as governor in the Commonwealth. Unlike John Hancock, Samuel Adams spent most of his life in poverty. Samuel Adams died in 1803 at the age of 81. After you exit the Granary Burying Ground, through the main gates, follow the Freedom Trail down Tremont Street to the corner of Tremont and School Street, and you will see the King's Chapel.
Next stop.
This church was the idea of James II of England, who wanted to put an Anglican church in Puritan Boston. The Puritans were very much against this idea of a non-Puritan church being constructed in the city. Because it was difficult to get land to build the church on, the royal governor, Governor Andros, ordered that King's Chapel be built on a town burying ground in 1688. They took a corner of the oldest burial ground in the city and put the church there. This stone church was built in 1756, around the original wooden structure. The most famous burial in the burial ground attached to the church is the first governor of Massachusetts, John Winthrop. Notice the church's bell tower. Paul Revere cast the bell in 1814. The original bell cast in England was hung in 1772. In 1814, it cracked and was recasted by Revere, and is reported to be the last bell that Revere cast himself. The bell was rung 83 times in Paul Revere's honor when he passed away in 1818 at the age of 83. Revere said that the bell inside King's Chapel was the sweetest bell I ever made. It is certainly one of his largest bells. The bell still rings today. The church is an active church. King's Chapel is a Unitarian church today, and welcomes visitors inside to tour the building. Our next stop on the Freedom Trail is on School Street. Look down the sidewalk next to King's Chapel, and you will see a monument for the Boston Latin School.
Next stop.
Open in 1635, this is the oldest school in America and is still operational today. The school's current location is near Fenway Park. The monument for the school is in the design of a hopscotch game. Some of its famous students include Benjamin Franklin, whose statue stands on the former school's site, John Hancock, Sam Adams, John Adams, and Charles Bulfinch. Where the Boston Latin School once stood stands the site of Old City Hall from 1865. For 104 years, Boston's mayor held court here until 1969, when they moved into City Hall's current location across from Faneuil Hall, known as New City Hall. The Old City Hall building now houses office space and a Ruth Chris Steakhouse. The statue of Boston Mayor Josiah Quincy stands in the courtyard. Josiah Quincy was the mayor of Boston during the construction of Quincy Market, which is named for him, which is the expansion of Faneuil Hall. Prior to 1820, the Boston Harbor came right up to the back of Faneuil Hall, and the market was constructed between 1820 and 1826. When Quincy Market opened in 1826, the expansion was named for the Boston mayor. In the old courtyard of Old City Hall, you can see the donkey of the Democratic Party. This sculpture is one of the only sculptures in Boston you can actually sit on and take a photo. There are also two bronze footprints on the ground at the head of the donkey, with an elephant on the sole of each footprint. This is for Republicans to pose in front of while standing in opposition to the Democratic Party. For our next stop, follow the Freedom Trail to Washington Street, and you will come to the Old South Meeting House.
Next stop.
This church is where the Sons of Liberty departed a meeting on December 16, 1773, and dumped 242 chests of tea, over $1 million worth of tea today, into the Boston Harbor. The famous Boston Tea Party. Built in 1729, the church's clock tower is the oldest clock tower in Boston. The bell here was also cast by Paul Revere. When war broke out in 1775, British troops, in retaliation for the Boston Tea Party, ripped out the pews and made a bar out of the first floor balcony. They used the church as a riding school to train the British cavalry. It took 7 years to restore the church after the British were forced out of Boston in 1776. In 1872, when the Great Fire of Boston destroyed most of the buildings around the Old South Meeting House, the church's congregation sold the building and moved to a new church in Boston's Back Bay neighborhood. The Old South Meeting House was almost torn down in the aftermath of the fire, but was saved as a result of one of the first successful efforts to preserve a historic structure. Some of the famous people who helped save the building were abolitionist Wendell Phillips and writers Julia Ward Howe and Ralph Waldo Emerson. The site is now a museum. Feel free to pause this audio recording if you'd like to go inside. The next Freedom Trail site sits on the corner of Washington and School Street and is one of Boston's oldest brick structures. The structure here was built in 1712 and is the oldest commercial building in Boston. It housed the former site of the Old Corner Bookstore. The bookstore was made famous for the publishers Ticknor and Fields, who resided on the second floor, and were at the heart of American book publishing in the mid-1800s. From this building, Ticknor and Fields published the works of Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Nathaniel Hawthorne, Ralph Waldo Emerson, John Greenleaf Whittier, Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., and Charles Dickens, who lived in Boston for 2 years, as well as Louisa May Alcott. Many of these writers were frequent visitors to the building for meetings on the second floor. These and other authors would meet and discuss poetry, politics, and literature. A very intellectual and literate place back in the day. Now it is the site of a Chipotle. The next stop following the Freedom Trail down Washington Street, and you will be at the Old State House.
Next stop.
This was the center of civic life in colonial Boston, and was where folks like John Adams and James Otis would argue against the policies of the British Crown. On the Washington Street side of the State House, look up, and you will see the gilded gold eagle, the symbol of America. We call this the American side of the State House. The eagle was placed there in 1789, when George Washington visited Boston as president. At that time, Washington Street was called Orange Street, and the city of Boston renamed the street as Washington Street, in honor of America's first president on his visit to Boston. Walk down the Freedom Trail to the front of the old State House. Look up at the balcony. On this balcony in July 18, 1776, the Declaration of Independence reached Boston from Philadelphia and was read here for the first time. The reading caused a mini-riot, during which the symbol of the British crown, the lion and unicorn which sits atop of the old State House, was ripped down and burnt in a fire. The gilded lion and unicorn was put back up on the old State House in 1883, when the building was refurbished. Every July 4th at 10 a.m., the Declaration of Independence is read from the balcony. The lion and the unicorn, however, are not torn down. An interesting combination of historic and modern, the State Street subway station can be reached through the basement of the old State House. On the walkway in front of the old State House is the monument for the five victims killed on March 5, 1770, during the Boston Massacre, which took place in the middle of what is now called State Street, formerly known as King Street. In the center of the monument is a five-pointed star, signifying the five deaths, enclosed by six cobblestones, signifying the six wounded that night. And stretching from the center are 13 cobblestone spokes, representing the original 13 colonies. The Boston Massacre was more of an incident than a massacre, and was a rallying cry for the American Revolution. It was a riot of angry Bostonians aimed at British soldiers, and was spun into what is referred to as the Boston Massacre by the famous plate which was etched by Paul Revere. The etching shows innocent Bostonians being fired on by British soldiers. The etching appears in all the papers of the colonies at the time, and was one of the most famous pieces of American propaganda. Follow the Freedom Trail to the Cradle of Liberty, Faneuil Hall.
Next stop.
This building, which was given to the city by Boston merchant Peter Faneuil, is famous for the meetings and protests that led to the American Revolution. Peter Faneuil was a rich Boston merchant who never married or had any children. He had the building constructed to carry on his legacy. Notice the grasshopper on top of the building. The grasshopper, whose name is Gus, was copied from the grasshopper on the London Royal Exchange building, which Peter Faneuil modeled his building after, and it was chosen as a sign of prosperity. The grasshopper has been on that building for 175 years and has witnessed all the events leading up to the American Revolution, including the Boston Massacre just down the street. Today there are four places connected by a cobblestone promenade. You can shop, dine, or watch street performers as you wander through the markets. The Ancient and Honorable Artillery Company of Massachusetts, which is the oldest chartered military organization in the Western Hemisphere, has a museum on the fourth floor of Faneuil Hall that is open to the public. From here, follow the Freedom Trail down Union Street. Notice the Union Oyster House, the oldest restaurant in the United States, and head down Hanover Street into the North End or Little Italy neighborhood. On your left will be the New England Holocaust Memorial.
Next stop.
The New England Holocaust Memorial was built to remember and reflect upon the Holocaust. It was the idea of a group of survivors of Nazi concentration camps who came to Boston after World War II. The memorial was dedicated in October 1995. It is made up of mostly granite and glass and shows six 54-foot towers lit internally so they glow at night. The number six recalls the millions of Jews killed in the Holocaust, a row of memorial candles, the six main death camps, and the 6 years, 1939 to 1945, during which the final solution of the Holocaust took place. The word remember is inscribed in the pathway in Hebrew and English. There is an inscribed timeline of the Holocaust, and walking through the towers, you will see quotes from Holocaust survivors. Each of the towers represent one of the major death camps. The name of the camps are engraved beneath each tower. Smoke rises from the bottom of each tower, symbolizing the crematoriums of the death camps. Each tower consists of 22 individual panels of glass. The outside walls of the panels are inscribed with 7-digit numbers, representing the numbers tattooed on the arms of the prisoners. There are 2,280,960 different numbers listed on the panels representing the 6 million Jews who were murdered during the Holocaust. Visitors often leave stones at the site of the memorial, reflecting the age-old Jewish custom of marking a graveside visit. When you're finished paying respects here, you can continue on to the next stop. It's a 5 to 7 minute walk, so keep listening for some tidbits about things you'll see along the way. You can listen as you walk along the Freedom Trail. When you follow the trail down Union Street across from the Holocaust Memorial, onto Marshall Street. At 10 Marshall Street is the Ebenezer Hancock House. This is the only building in Boston that is associated with John Hancock, famous for his signature at the bottom of the Declaration of Independence. Built in 1767, the building was once home to Ebenezer Hancock, who was John's brother and who also served as Paymaster General for the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. Across the way from Ebenezer Hancock House is the Boston Stone, which is embedded in the base of the building. The stone was brought to Boston from England in the 1700s and was used for many years as starting point for surveyors. The Freedom Trail then crosses Rose Kennedy Greenway. The Greenway is a series of parks which run through several neighborhoods in Boston. It was created as a result of the Big Dig, which was a 16-year construction project. The Big Dig called for the demolition of the John F. Kennedy Expressway, which had run on an elevated bridge throughout the city, and it developed an underground highway, Route 93, which now runs beneath the park. Named for the family's matriarch, her son, Senator Edward Kennedy, played an important role in creating the Rose Kennedy Greenway. The Freedom Trail crosses Cross Street, and standing on the corner is Tony DeMarco, the 1955 World Welterweight Champion and North End native, born Leonardo Leota. He jumped into the ring as a professional at the age of 16, using his friend's birth certificate, Tony DeMarco. Leota fought under the name for the rest of his career. Notice the street named for him and the neighborhood he grew up in, which crosses Hanover Street. You are now walking through the oldest neighborhood in Boston, established in 1630, and where many of the first Puritans arrived in Boston and make their home. The trail winds down Richmond Street to North Square to our next stop, the Paul Revere House.
Next stop.
In North Square sits the oldest structure in Boston, the Paul Revere House, built in 1680. It is one of few remaining 17th century buildings in a major city in the United States. The Paul Revere House sits on the site of the Second Church of Boston. The famous Puritan minister Increase Mather and his family, including his son Cotton Mather, lived here from 1670 until it was destroyed in the Great Fire of 1676. Paul Revere lived in the house for 30 years, from 1770 to 1800. Every March 5th, on the anniversary of the Boston Massacre, Paul Revere would hang his etching of the Boston Massacre in his front window. Paul was forced to leave Boston in 1775, when the American Revolution began. He left the house with his wife and 15 of his 16 children and moved to Cambridge. He left his 14-year-old son to stay and keep watch on the house for the 10 months he was in Cambridge. By the mid-1800s, the house had become an immigrant tenement, and the ground floor was remodeled for use as shops. It housed a candy store, a cigar factory, a bank, and a produce business. In 1902, Paul Revere's great-grandson, John P. Reynolds, Jr., purchased the building. Over the next few years, money was raised, and the Paul Revere Memorial Association formed to preserve and renovate the building. In April of 1908, the Paul Revere House opened its doors to the public as one of the earliest historic house museums in the United States, and the museum welcomes visitors today for a small fee. Follow the trail to the Paul Revere Prado, and you will be at one of the most photographed statues in Boston, the Paul Revere statue.
Next stop.
This statue sits in the shadow of the Old North Church, which made Paul Revere famous and will be our next stop. The statue was designed by Cyrus Edwin Dallin. At the age of 22, this was Dallin's first commission. Born in Utah, Dallin is also the sculptor of the Angel Moroni atop Salt Lake Temple in Salt Lake City, Utah. And one of his most famous works, Appeal to the Great Spirit, sits in front of the Museum of Fine Arts, Boston. Dallin began working on the statue in 1883, but it was not finished until his fifth or sixth version was approved in 1899. Though it would not be until September 22, 1940, when the statue was opened to the public, 57 years after it was first commissioned. The statue shows Revere atop his horse, on his famous midnight ride to warn that the regulars are coming. If you go by the statue when one of Boston's sports teams are in championship series or game, he will be donning the shirt of the team playing for the trophy. Walk across the Paul Revere Prado to the Old North Church, the oldest church building in Boston.
Next stop.
The Old North Church is free to enter with a suggested donation, and there are guides inside the church who will give you a quick overview of Revere's midnight ride, the night of April 18, 1775, which resulted in the battle that started the American Revolution. In the steeple of the church, lanterns would be hung to warn the patriots across the Charles River in Charlestown about the movements of British troops. One, if by land, two, if by sea. When you enter the church, notice the pulpit. This is known as a wine glass pulpit because of its shape. The pews of the church are called boxed pews and were practical as the building did not have a heating system when it opened in 1723. There are metal boxes on the windowsills of the church, which were used to place warm coals in and then place on the floor of the box pew to throw a little heat during the service. Look upwards towards the clock and notice the set of four angels. These angels were donated to the church by the pirate Tom Grutchy. Carved in Belgium, the ship and these angels were traveling on a voyage from Belgium to a Catholic church in Quebec when in 1746 the ship was hijacked and the contents of the ship were stolen. The booty was smuggled into Boston via tunnel from the harbor to Grutchy's home on Salem Street. Grutchy then donated the angels to the church, where they have been on display ever since. The Old North Church, follow the trail up Hull Street to Copse Hill Burial Ground.
Next stop.
Copse Hill Burying Ground was established in the North End in 1659. It is named after a local shoemaker, William Copp, and is the resting place of many of the merchant class from colonial Boston. This is the second oldest burying ground in Boston. Some of the people buried here include the Puritan ministers Increase and his son Cotton Mather, who are often associated with their role in the Salem witch trials. Shim Drown, who made the grasshopper weather vane on top of Faneuil Hall, as well as the banner weather vane on top of the Old North Church. Robert Newman, who hung the lanterns in the steeple of the Old North Church on the night of Paul Revere's ride, and Prince Hall, the first African-American mason, and who the Prince Hall Masons are named after. As you exit the Copse Hill Burial Ground, stand at the top of the stairs and look directly across the street to number 44 Hull Street, and you will see Boston's Skinny House.
Next stop.
This is the skinniest house in Boston, and built as a spite house. A spite house is a house to spite or aggravate one's neighbors. The house was built by Joseph Eustace in the mid-1800s. Eustace, a boat builder, was used to constructing narrow structures. He inherited the land with his brother. Joe was away from Boston, and when he came home to claim his inheritance, he found the land was occupied by his brother's house, leaving Joseph only a sliver of land. To spite his brother, he built his house four stories high, taller than his brother's house, to block not only the sunshine from entering, but also the great view of the Boston Harbor, which they enjoyed back then. The house has a width of 10 feet 2 inches at its widest point, and is a mere 6 feet 2 inches wide at its narrowest.
The skinny house was on the market in 2021 for $1.2 million.
We'll continue on to our next stop, But there's a walk to get there, so listen on for a few more facts about sights you'll see along the way. Following the Freedom Trail from Hull Street to Commercial Street, look right just down the street. This is where the site of the molasses tank explosion and subsequent famous molasses flood of January 15, 1919. On that day around noon, a 50-foot, 17-meter-high, 90-feet-around tank of molasses exploded, sending 2 million gallons and a 30-foot or 10-meter wave of molasses traveling at 35 miles per hour as it rumbled through the North End. The wave leveled buildings, killing 21 people, injuring 150, and killed over 36 horses. The cleanup took 2 weeks using mostly fire hoses. There are rumors that on wicked hot days you can smell the molasses which seeped into the basements of the buildings and surrounding land. To get to our next stop, you'll need to cross the Charlestown Bridge. As you cross the Boston Harbor over the bridge, look to your left, and you will see the TD Garden, home of both the Boston Bruins and Boston Celtics. Once you're over the bridge, you're in Charlestown. Charlestown was named for King Charles I of England and was founded in 1628, so it's 2 years older than Boston. It was the first capital of the Massachusetts Bay Colony. It is also the place where the Puritans first landed in 1630, before settling in Boston just a few months later. You're making your way to the USS Constitution, and the Freedom Trail should continue to lead you there.
Next stop.
This is the oldest ship in the U.S. Navy. The USS Constitution was the third of six ships built following the Naval Act of 1794 to protect American merchant ships from pirates off the coast of North Africa. It was made famous during the War of 1812, where it never lost a battle, and was nicknamed Old Ironsides because the ship was so strong that the cannonballs from the British ships would bounce harmlessly off its side, though it is made of wood. The ship is on the U.S. Naval Base, and visitors are welcome to board the ship and take a free guided tour led by sailors of the U.S. Navy. In 1830, the USS Constitution was about to be dismantled and scrapped because it was in need of repairs. It was saved by a poem written by Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr., who was also a Supreme Court justice. The poem is called Old Ironsides, and it rallied public support for the ship and raised private funds to help restore the ship. During the American Civil War, the ship served as a training ship for the U.S. Naval Academy. When it was finally retired from active service in 1881, it was used to house newly recruited sailors before they were assigned to a ship. To enter the naval base, you'll need a photo ID and to go through security. There is no admission fee, but a donation is suggested. You can find the opening hours on their website, linked in the text below. From here, follow the Freedom Trail to our final destination. You will be at the Bunker Hill Monument.
Next stop.
The monument here was dedicated on June 17, 1843, 68 years after the famous battle took place. At this site was one of the most important battles of the American Revolution. Although most of the fighting that day occurred on Breed's Hill, the event is known as the Battle of Bunker Hill. The 221-foot or 67-meter monument took 16 years to construct and commemorates the Battle of Bunker Hill. It is open to the public, and visitors are welcome to climb the 294 steps to the top of the monument. The statue of Major General William Prescott stands in front of the monument. As the British forces advance up the hill against the Americans, Prescott, in an effort to conserve the Patriots' supply of ammunition, yelled the famous line, "Don't fire until you see the whites of their eyes." As British soldiers continued up the hill, the Patriots, following the orders of Prescott, waited until the Redcoats were within their sights to fire, throwing the British troops into retreat. After reforming their lines, the British attacked again, with the same result. Prescott's men were running low on ammunition, and when the Redcoats went up the hill for a third time, they reached the dugouts and engaged the Patriots in hand-to-hand combat using bayonets. The outnumbered Americans were forced to retreat. Even though they retreated, the Patriots inflicted 1,000 enemy casualties, with more than 200 killed and at least 800 wounded. Many of the casualties included British officers. A little more than 100 Americans were killed, with more than 300 others wounded. The battle, considered a defeat for the Patriots, as in that they were forced to retreat to give the hill to the British, but it showed that the colonists could stand strong against the mighty British Empire and inflict major casualties on their troops. We end the Freedom Trail tour here. You are now in Charleston, and after all that walking, you may be hungry. We highly recommend a famous tavern called Warren Tavern, which is named for Joseph Warren, who was killed at the Battle of Bunker Hill. It was built in 1780 and is reported to be one of the first buildings rebuilt after the British burned Charleston after the Battle of Bunker Hill. Some of the tavern's guests included George Washington and Paul Revere. You can find their web address in the text below. If you need to get back to the Boston Common, the best way to do so by foot is to follow the brick line of the Freedom Trail backwards. But there is an Orange Line station, Community College Station, about a 10 to 15 minute walk from here. Use the next stop in the app to navigate there if needed. Thank you for joining Free Tours by Foot and Atlantis Audio Tours. Check out our guided walking tours in Boston and many other cities at www.freetoursbyfoot.com.